Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. Dennis Hart is here with our Friday review of this past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other local area pages.
So let's get started. On Tuesday, the Tribune reported on the visit of the first of four candidates for the position of president of Iowa State University. His name is Sunny Ramaswamy, who is director of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Ramaswamy's introduction to the community at large came during a public forum attended by about 250 people in the sunroom of the campus of Memorial Union on Monday afternoon. Earlier in the day, Ramaswamy had meetings on campus with students and staff. And before he took any questions from the audience in the Memorial Union, he said that in order for the university to keep its promises and to advance, it will have to be open and accessible in its decision-making. Former ISU President Stephen Leith faced questions about lack of transparency when reports revealed that he flew university aircraft for personal use and did not publicly disclose that he had damaged one of the planes during a hard landing 3 years ago. Leith eventually apologized. Ramaswamy said there is what he called an aura around Bircher Hall, which is the main administration building on campus, and that decisions have to be made, in his words, in concert with each other and collaboratively. He said that also means ISU decision-makers need to hold each other accountable. He said the university needs to work toward creating an equitable environment for everyone and toward sticking to its land-grant university mission. During the question and answer session of the forum, Ramaswamy was asked how he would deal with a controversial speaker who was coming to campus. He responded by lamenting the current divisiveness in politics, but said ISU should not turn away speakers just because they might say something not everyone likes. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, Ames School District administrators and principals presented their 5-year goals to help the district close its racial disparity gap. About 60 parents and community members were in the audience Monday night for that presentation during the district's board meeting. Associate Superintendent Mandy Ross said that race, ethnicity, gender, or financial status should not be a predictor of academic success. But she said the district's student achievement data indicates there is a relationship between a student's academic success and ethnic and racial identity. Ross said the data shows that the district needs to abandon academic practices that may serve to marginalize select groups of students, and the district should provide a more rigorous and culturally relevant curriculum to students. According to the district's data, nearly 89% of all Ames students are reading at a proficient level this fall. When that's broken down by race, 94% of Asian students, 92% of white students, 86% of multiracial students, 80% of Hispanic students, and 64% of black students are reading at a proficient level. The goal is for 95% of all Ames students to read at a proficient level in 5 years. At the middle school level, 87% of 5th through 7th grade students are proficient in math, while 90% of those students are proficient in science. At the 8th through 10th grade level, 88% of students are proficient in math, 90% are proficient in science. Ross, the associate superintendent, said strategies on how to minimize achievement gaps will vary from school to school. Also Tuesday in the Tribune, word that the heavy rain we had in the past week or so could cause some headaches for local farmers as they try to harvest their fields. All that rain has come at a time when farmers need their ground and their crops to stay dry. About 9% of Iowa's corn crop and 21% of soybeans have already been harvested. Those numbers are about the same as last year at this time. Also on Tuesday, a report that absentee voting began Monday for city elections around Story County. Voters can vote in person at the auditor's office at 906 Street in Nevada. Friday, October 27th is the last day for voters to pre-register. November 3rd is the deadline to request a mailed absentee ballot. Election Day, November 7th. In Wednesday's Tribune, the story of the second ISU presidential finalist and her appearance on campus, which took place Tuesday. Pamela Whitten, the provost at the University of Georgia, spent the first half of her remarks in a public forum at the Memorial Union praising ISU students, the ongoing Forever True fundraiser campaign, the university's research park, the school's extension and outreach, and more. But she said the university could improve on some things, such as graduation and retention rates, new student programs, and more collaboration. She talked about setting bold goals and implementing a strategy to take ISU from, in her words, an excellent university to an exceptional university. She spoke to about 200 people in the Great Hall of the Union. She often abandoned the lectern and strolled back and forth in front of the audience. She called ISU one of the better land-grant universities and praised recent million-dollar donations to the university's College of Business and its College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. She praised the students, saying, "You see your students here, they're obviously smart and committed to bettering themselves, but they're also committed to bettering the world around them." She said the university could be even better, perhaps trying for retention rates in the mid-90s instead of the high 80s, and improved graduation rates. She also said the university could push to lower its student-to-faculty ratio, which is now 19 to 1. And she said more collaboration is also key. "We want to lift the university as a whole," she said. "There are ways you can come together in that long term to benefit everyone." One ISU student asked Witten how she would foster an inclusive campus in light of recent white supremacist posters that were left on the ISU campus. Witten said the university needs to be proactive and keep an open, constant dialogue about diversity issues, not simply wait for something to happen. Witten was the second presidential finalist to visit ISU this week. Also front page in the Tribune on Wednesday, a report on what happened Tuesday night at the Ames City Council meeting. The council approved the second reading of an ordinance that would establish a six-month moratorium on new rental occupancy permits for single and two-family homes in neighborhoods near Iowa State. On this vote, the council decided to include the Colonial Village neighborhood, which had not been included in the first vote. The council also decided that this ordinance would end April 30th next year. Between now and then, council members will consider permanent ways to regulate rental occupancy in Ames. New rules are needed because the state has passed a law doing away with Ames's ability to regulate rentals on the basis of non-family members. The council is expected to vote on final adoption of the ordinance on October 24th. The council also approved the first steps toward redeveloping the property of the old Crawford Elementary School at 415 Stanton Avenue. The property has been purchased by developers who want to turn the old school into an independent senior living facility for residents who are 55 years old or older. The council approved an application to amend the land use on the site from low-density residential to high-density residential and authorize a rezoning application that would allow for multifamily housing and single-use senior living homes. The council also approved an application for funding consideration under the federal government's Flood Mitigation Assistance Program. The city wants to make improvements on South Duff Avenue and Squaw Creek to try to prevent recurrences of flooding there. Also on Wednesday in the Trib, the Story County Board of Supervisors approved a payment to reacquire about 200 acres of land from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. That deal comes more than a half century after the Corps took over the land. Board members unanimously approved allocating $152,000 to eventually gain possession of a strip of land between Ames and Story City. The county first tried to get the land back in the early 1970s. The Corps had acquired the land in the 60s as Interstate 35 was under construction. The idea was to use the land for the interstate to connect Ames with Story City, but the freeway was built farther east, so the next idea was to use the land to create a reservoir. That never happened either. Since then, the Corps of Engineers has kept the land, allowing several developments to be built along the way. Now the county wants it back so it can enter into an agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office. Front page in the Trib on Thursday, the visit of the third ISU presidential finalist, Dale Whitaker, who is now provost and executive vice president of the University of Central Florida. About 250 students, faculty, and community members attended his public forum on campus. Whitaker talked about the need for diversity and initiatives to support historically marginalized groups, as well as the need to make college degrees more attainable. He noted the importance of building a diverse atmosphere at the university to foster creativity and making college education attainable for all, regardless of economic background. He said, in his words, "Diversity says we make better decisions as a group when we have multiple perspectives at the table." And Whitaker said, "Everybody, every student, every faculty member should know exactly where the leadership of the university stands in terms of inclusion." Whitaker also outlined the goals he'd have for ISU if he becomes president. Among them, helping the university become a leader in ending hunger and creating a sustainable future, unleashing the university's full potential to change lives and livelihoods through people's ability to earn a college degree, and cementing the school as having the best undergraduate learning experience. The fourth finalist for the ISU president's job, current ISU Dean of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, Wendy Winterstein, appeared at a public forum on Thursday. You can read about her comments at that forum in the Tribune today when it comes into your mailbox. In the Boone News Republican this week, a story about Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who visited Boone Monday afternoon for a sometimes hostile town hall meeting that touched on health care, gun control, North Korea, and President Trump. There was a standing-room-only crowd on hand. Grassley told that crowd that if Republicans had been able to get a health care bill through Congress this year, it likely would have kept much of the existing Affordable Care Act in place. He said his vision for healthcare is a free market approach in which the government has little power in the types of insurances offered. Several people asked Grassley what could be done about gun control in the wake of that mass shooting in Las Vegas that left 58 dead and more than 500 wounded. He said he does not believe there are enough votes in the Senate to bring a gun control bill to the floor unless there are bipartisan efforts behind it, and he said it would be pretty hard to find any kind of bipartisan effort these days. As for North Korea, Grassley said American diplomacy toward that country is going on through China and the United Nations. He said those must go forward before anyone considers any kind of military action. He said any military action would, in his words, be catastrophic, without a doubt. Also in the news, Republican this week, a student at the Des Moines Area Community College campus in Boone has been charged with carrying a weapon on school grounds after authorities received a report of a student in possession of a semi-automatic handgun. When Boone police and county sheriff's deputies arrived on campus, they found the student, identified as 22-year-old Boyang Zhu, and discovered he had a handgun secured in the waistband of his pants. Zhu told authorities he had a permit to carry the gun and did not know he could not carry it on Community College District property. Authorities confirmed he did have a permit to carry. From the pages of this week's Nevada Journal, at the most recent Nevada City Council meeting, Realtor Mark Olson told the council that some residents are looking to bring back the Lincoln Highway Days rodeo in time for next year's celebration. Olson said about $10,000 have already been donated for the event and that it might take as much as $25,000 to get that rodeo off the ground. Also at that Nevada City Council meeting, Transportation Director Jason Sampson requested that the school transportation department get some notice from the city when streets are going to be closed. He said he had no idea that E Avenue was going to be closed recently, and he'd like to get advance word so that he could notify his bus drivers. City leaders promised they'd look into what they could do about that. The council passed the second reading of an ordinance that would reduce fireworks hours this coming December, and the second reading of the snow emergency ordinance that makes it clear the city does not need to notify people when a snow emergency is in effect. Fire Chief Ray Reynolds said the city has received a $560 grant from the Memorial Lutheran Church in Nevada. That money will go to help clean up the properties of some people who have been issued nuisance orders by the city but who need financial help to make the needed improvements. The fire chief also reminded everyone that the Nevada Fire Department's open house will take place tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also in the journal, a report on Monday night's Nevada School Board meeting where time was spent talking about self-paced math for third and fourth graders at Central Elementary. Third grade teacher Randy Poole and fourth grade teacher Maggie Davis said they encourage their students to work at their own pace on a range of mathematical topics, from fractions to drawing angles with protractors to measurements. And they said they're seeing positive signs from their students, including an increase in collaborations and less worrying about competing with their peers. From the pages of the Story City Herald this week, word that the Roland County School District has progressed with plans for renovating the high school auditorium and building a new football stadium and track facility. All of this would take place if voters approve a $5 million bond election next February. The stadium would be built on the site of the current Outlet Mall, with a grass football field in about the same place as the mall building. There would be a tree-lined entry to the parking lot, with plans to reuse as much of the existing parking lots as possible to keep costs down. The Victory Bell would be featured at the northwest corner of the field near the entrance. The north end of the field would have a raised berm, and the northeast corner would feature a building housing locker rooms. The school district wants to relocate the existing stadium because of ongoing or recurring problems involving flooding and other environmental concerns. Parking and sidewalks are limited right now, causing fans to walk to and from the stadium on streets that are often busy. The existing football field has flooded 8 times in the past 9 years, and that flooding is damaging the track and field surface. Space issues include limited restrooms for spectators and athletes, and stadium seating is limited to about 850 in the home bleachers and 250 in the visitors' bleachers. The new stadium would offer 1,200 seats on the home bleachers and 300 for visitors. If voters approve the bond, the high school auditorium would be renovated. Among other things, it would get new high-efficiency lights and a new sound system. It would also get new seating, a new carpet, stage curtains, and paint. Energy efficiency would be improved with updated lighting and equipment. The auditorium was built 27 years ago. It's used almost daily during the school year and includes more than 50 scheduled performances, presentations, and meetings. The Roland Story District's current tax rate is $14.27 per thousand of taxable evaluation. If the bond is passed, that rate would increase by $1.18, bringing it to $15.45. The bond would be paid back over 16 years. Speaking of that Outlet Mall in Story City, it closes today, Friday. That leaves the future of the site up to voters in the school district election next February. If that bond issue passes, the mall would be demolished and the school district would build that new stadium and track facility. If the bond measure fails, the land would be open to others to buy and to redevelop. And that's a look at some of the major stories making news in and around Ames this week, and there were a lot of them. I'll be back next Friday, and we'll do it all over again.
And that was Dennis Hart with the news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. For more information from the Tribune, you can go to amestrib.com. And thank you, Dennis.
This time around, I am gonna do it like you never knew it. Oh, I'll make it through. The time has come for me to break out of the shell. I have to shout that I am coming up. I'm coming up. I want the world to know I got to let it show.
Diana Ross with I'm Coming Out, and you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Gay Pride, or in this case, Ames Pride Fest, is coming tomorrow to Ames, Saturday the 14th. The day starts out with a drag queen story time where you are invited to join spectacular drag queens at the Ames Public Library for stories, crafts, and a celebration of love, individuality, and acceptance. And then at noon, Pride Fest starts at the Ames Bandshell Park. Here to tell us more about this inaugural celebration are Nikki Port from the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at Iowa State University and Joel Hochstein, Chair of Ames Pride, the organization that is putting on Ames Pride Fest. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thanks, Ursula.
Thank you.
Tell us what is going to happen. What is Pride Fest?
Pride Fest is exactly what you said, a celebration of love and individuality of folks who are living here in the city of Ames. And Ames has never had anything like this before.
This is the first Gay Pride in Ames.
So we're really excited to be sponsoring that and having that as a part of our a signature event of our organization.
Now, what else has been going on this week? This is kind of the grand finale of a series of things that have been going on.
Right. This week is coming out week. It's coming out day. It was on Wednesday. But we've kind of coined this week as coming out week. Iowa State University's done it for many years. So we took that to the community this year in terms of coming out week. So on Sunday, we had Queers and Beers, which was a 21-plus networking event. We had Queer Trivia, and that was at London Underground. On Tuesday...
So how did that go?
It was fantastic. It was great. The questions are really hard. I didn't know most of them. So maybe that says something about me being an uninformed queer person, so I need to do my own work.
So this was like LGBTQ trivia?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, world trivia, queer people of color. We had...
So what year was Stonewall?
Oh my gosh, it was, see, this is where I fail. And I want to, so that was a question at Queers and Beers on Sunday.
I'm sure it was.
And I think maybe only one team got that right.
Wow.
So, you know, part of Ames Pride, part of us, our mission is to do education in the community too. And so,
that was step one.
We're going to start with ourselves and then we're going to, you know, translate that to the community. So, yeah.
So what else happened?
Tuesday, Mayor Campbell did a mayoral proclamation stating that this week was coming out week in the city of Ames. To our knowledge, that's the first time that a mayor in the city of Ames has done any sort of LGBT proclamation before. So we're pretty proud of that.
But Ames has a history of non-discrimination ordinances, right?
We do, actually. So
why don't you read the mayor's proclamation?
Absolutely. Whereas on October 11th, 1987, nearly 500,000 people participated in the March on Washington for Lesbian Gay Rights and was the impetus for the celebration of Coming Out Day annually across the United States. And whereas in 1991, the city of Ames added non-discrimination protections for its citizens on the basis of sexual orientation, making discrimination illegal within its limits 16 years before the state of Iowa.
1988.
1991. Mm-hmm. Whereas in 2007, the state of Iowa added non-discrimination protections for its citizens on the basis of gender identity, making discrimination illegal. And whereas the city of Ames strives to be a diverse, inclusive, and equitable municipality that values the richness of diverse experiences, perspectives, and life stories brings to all of its citizens. Whereas Ames Pride and the Ames Public Library will host the inaugural Ames Pride Fest on October 14th, 2017, in Banshell Park from noon until 6 p.m. And whereas the City of Ames supports its lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities, therefore I, Ann H. Campbell, obviously Mayor Campbell was saying this, not me, Mayor of the City of Ames of Iowa, do hereby proclaim the week of October 8th through the 14th, 2017, as Coming Out Week in the City of Ames. And then Mayor encouraged all citizens in the city to support those individuals courageous enough to have already come out, to continually foster an environment in which others may find the strength to do the same without hesitation, and to feel the richness of a community that embraces them as they are. So that was the proclamation on Tuesday.
By Mayor Campbell.
By Mayor Campbell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And where did she make this?
She made this at City Hall, so at the mm-hmm. very beginning of the City Council meeting on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was a really nice gesture for Mayor Campbell to do.
Mm-hmm. What else happened during the week?
Wednesday, yeah. Coming Out, mm-hmm. the Coming Out Community Picnic mm-hmm. was hosted by our group. Mm-hmm. And there it was a potluck gathering where we posted questions for the community to kind of give some direction for Ames Pride, the organization.
Mm-hmm. And this was attended by both students and community people?
Yeah, yep, mm-hmm. yep. Nikki and I had a prior commitment on campus, so we actually weren't there, but from what we heard, was pretty well attended for the first of its kind that we're aware of in Ames by both students and community members.
Joel, is Ames Pride a community organization or an Iowa State organization?
We are an Ames community organization. Iowa State has its own kind of structures for LGBT folks at mm-hmm. the institution, and what we didn't see was that kind of translating over into the community. And so it is a community, an Ames community organization. We're currently working through the IRS to get our 501c3 nonprofit status, so we've filed for that, and we're just waiting to hear back from them.
We have a board of directors that's made up of community members, mm-hmm. and we're still taking applications for the board of directors, even though we already have
nine
members.
So you're a relatively new organization.
Yeah, we...
Like, what time is it?
That's right. How that's how new.
In real time,
yeah.
You're hearing the formation of an organization that, in real time.
That's right. this all kind of came about. And, you know, folks via email were talking about, you know, can we put on some sort of, and I think folks were just thinking, like, can we find a space for people to just gather, right? It wasn't anything big or formal. And then it kind of turned into this Pride Fest, and then mm-hmm. it turned into this nonprofit organization that sponsors Pride Fest, and I may have taken us really far down that road.
But when I came on board, it was just going to be Pride Fest, and then as we were planning it, Joel said, hey, how about we do some nonprofit status here?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
I think it's important. I think it's important work for the community. It's important for the folks who live here.
Well, it sounds to me that at very least you plan to make Pride Fest an annual event.
We hope.
With a structure behind
mm-hmm.
it.
We hope uh-huh. to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ames Pride Fest will be the signature event of Ames Pride, which is the nonprofit organization. So.
Wow, so you kind of heard it first here. Gay Pride is a new community organization.
Yeah, yeah, Ames
with
Pride.
With the backup from the mayor's proclamation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you talk just a little bit about, I mean, Gay Pride is a festival that happens around the world by now.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just talk a little bit about that for someone who may not be moving in those worlds and be that aware of what Gay Pride can turn into? Elsewhere?
Well, you're right. Across the nation and around the world, there are Pride festivals that happen. Typically, and it is in relation to National Coming Out Day, the Stonewall Riots. It's a way to keep visibility for our community and to identify mm-hmm. that we're here and that we're contributing and that it's important to embrace the community.
Mm-hmm.
And just for reference, the Stonewall Riots was an event that occurred when a bar in New York City finally went into revolt against police corruption, where police were harassing and taking bribes from gay people. And finally, people had enough, and there was a relatively prolonged riot that ended up with a shift in perception of gay people being easy victims.
Yes.
Led
yes.
by queer and trans people of color, I might add.
That's right.
So so you'll see them, you'll see Pride Fests around, you know, you'll see Minneapolis Pride, Chicago Pride, New York Pride, all that. But we had never seen something like that in Ames. And so...
So what does Pride look like in other places?
Oh, it can it can run the gambit in lots of different places. You know, if you go to some of the larger cities, you have hundreds of thousands of folks who are lining the streets for parades, events at local establishments. What we've tried to do and what we heard from the community here was we want Ames Pride Fest to be family-friendly and community-oriented. And so we've tried really hard to make it family-friendly.
So what kind of things do you have planned?
Great question. so we have lots of vendors.
Well, the first thing is that it's open to the public.
Right.
That it's not that anybody can attend.
Right. And it's at the Banshell Park starting at noon.
Starting at noon. Stage will start at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of some of the entertainment that we have, Ben Schrag and the Cautionaries. They'll be there, local band. So if anybody knows those folks, Ben's got a fantastic voice, and they will be performing for around an hour later in the afternoon. We'll start off the stage with a small ensemble from the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus. They're coming up from Des Moines, which is fantastic, as a small group, not necessarily the large group. We'll have Iowa Afterburn, which is an Iowa-based fire performance group. And so they'll be on stage for about a half an hour or so, about mid-afternoon.
That should be exciting. That's always
great. It'll be fantastic.
Tell us a little bit about the Gay Men's Choir from Des Moines.
Sure. So I think originally they were known as the Gay Men's the Des Moines Men's Chorus up until about 92. And then reorganized in 2001. And so they have a pretty extensive history in terms of performing in Des Moines. They do various shows in Des Moines on a yearly basis. If you haven't gone down to Des Moines to listen to them, we really encourage folks to do that. There's some singers from here in Ames that travel down to Des Moines and sing in the chorus. And so if you want to support local folks, that's a great way to do that.
So this is just an independent choir or
yep.
chorus?
Probably the thing that one of the things I'm most excited about is our partnership with the Ames Public Library. And so when we're talking about family-friendly accessibility, people feeling welcome, that partnership with Ames Public Library, I think, has been really, really great for us.
Right, and they're going to be doing a story time on stage. They'll have the bookmobile there. So we're really thankful for their participation in making something like this happen. They'll be helping out along with the workspace at Iowa State are coming to do a kid zone area. And so there'll be crafts and stuff for kids to do there. We know several of the vendors are going to be doing kids activities at their stations, at their individual vendor spaces. So lots of things for the kids to do. So we would encourage folks to bring their families.
So the community has really, in a sense, embraced this event there.
Yeah.
You have a lot of support from all sides. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk, and I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. We are hearing from Nikki Port from the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at Iowa State University and Joel Hochstein, chair of Ames Pride, the organization that's putting on Pride Fest, which is happening on this Saturday, the 14th, starting at noon at the Ames Banshell Park. And we were speaking about the support you're getting from the community. I noticed you do have quite a list of sponsors. And one of the top of the list I noticed was Barilla. That kind of jumped out at me because I was actually just in New York City with Becca, who's here, and Evan from KHOI. And we actually told somebody that Barilla was in Ames, and they said, oh, you know, Barilla had spoken out against gay people, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of negative feeling about them. So I was curious that they were top of the list of your sponsors. So I did look into it. In 2013, Brilla gained bad press when their chairman said he would never feature a same-sex couple in an ad for Brilla. But Brilla made a dramatic turnaround in the space of a year, expanding health care benefits for gender workers and their families, contributing money to gay rights causes, and featuring a lesbian couple on a promotional website. So obviously somebody spoke to them and got to them. And in 2014, they scored a top rating in the Human Rights Campaign's list of employers who are LGBT-friendly with perfect scores in the 8 categories that the Human Rights Campaign evaluates, including prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity, and offering health coverage for same-sex partners and transgender individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting, you know, story about a local business here mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Ames, although this didn't happen locally. They also have earned a lot of points for positively engaging with the LGBT community, as we're seeing here in Ames. Mm-hmm. The company said those efforts resulted in a great deal of positive change.
Right.
Clearly, the local branch of Brilla here in Ames is very supportive of what you're doing.
Yeah. We've got some good folks who are working at Brilla who are part of the LGBT community, and they are the ones who connected Brilla to our organization in terms of being a community sponsor among all the other community sponsors that we have. So, you know, public perception means something, and I
That's
think
right.
That when Brilla made the announcements that they made from the top echelons of their leadership, I think that folks spoke out, mm-hmm. and I think they probably felt some pressure about making all folks feel included, including LGBT people within their organization and publicly. And so we've seen some changes over the course of the last several years.
Right, but
I got
the impression it wasn't just about money, though, that it was a sincere – that's the impression I got. And mm-hmm. there actually was a statement from the same president who made the original funding statement, and he said that he was proud to say that a result of discussions – we have all learned a great deal about the true definition and meaning of a family, and over the past year we've worked hard to reflect that in Brilla. So mm-hmm. it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it would be my hope that it's not about the money, because
mm-hmm.
It really shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should be about valuing someone as a whole person, and it shouldn't be about the amount of money that you're going to get because of it.
Right. So what is the general goal of the Ames Pride Fest?
So, I mean, in terms of the Pride Fest, it's really about visibility. It's about building community among folks who are living in Ames and the surrounding area. We want folks to participate. We want folks to know that they belong and that they're welcomed here. We want to provide a space for folks to feel as comfortable as they are able or they can, considering their circumstances. And we also know that folks won't be able to attend Ames Pride Fest because maybe they're not out. It's not safe for them to be out. It's not safe for them to come to Pride Fest and be visible. And so we need to still do a lot of work in terms of changing some of the culture here, even within the city of Ames. We talk about being a really progressive community and an open community for all folks. We got a heck of a lot of work to do here. Ames Pride Fest and the organization Ames Pride hopefully can help make a difference.
When you say we have a lot of work to do here, what do you mean?
I hear stories from folks about we were actually just at Banshell yesterday doing some work, and we had a young student from Ames High School stop over. And they just came to say thanks for putting something on like this, right, in terms of increasing visibility and providing them with a space and an organization that can help build awareness and community. That was from an Ames High School student. You know, we've heard stories about transgender students in our schools and our community being bullied, both inside the schools and outside of the schools. We can work to change and educate folks on those issues and how you can support folks in being their whole and true and authentic selves. We've got some work to do, and if folks don't see that, I would encourage those folks to do some education in the areas where they might not see it, because it's there and it's prevalent. We just either exist in that space or we choose to ignore it at times. So we've got some work to do, particularly mm-hmm. among our youth.
Nikki, your mm-hmm. thoughts on that?
I echo everything that Joel said. also, we lose community members in Ames. People leave Ames because of the climate they experience. They either stay or leave, depending on how they feel in this environment. And so we have faculty and staff who decide, you know, no, not for me. We have community members. We have businesses, people who would be contributing members of Ames and help us to grow and learn and progress, who decide, you know what, I'm going to go somewhere else because I think I might feel safer there, or I might feel more included there. Mm-hmm. And so that's just another piece of that.
In terms of sponsors of Ames Pride Fest, three of the top ones that we have are really committed to making sure that folks feel welcome and folks feel included. Two of the top are from Iowa State University, the Division of Student Affairs, the College of Business, our two top sponsors. Collegiate Wesley Methodist Church is our third top sponsor. So, I mean, those are folks within the community, both at the university, that believe in what Nikki was just saying in terms of we want to make sure we're creating an environment to attract folks. We want to attract talent to our community, to our businesses, to our institutions, and we want to retain them and keep them here. But in order to do that, they need to feel safe and comfortable and accepted as who they are, regardless of what that means.
And I am speaking with Nikki Port, who's with the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at ISU, and Joel Hochstein, chair of Ames Pride, the organization that's putting on Pride Fest, which will be tomorrow at the Banshell Park at noon. One final question. What happens if it rains? Everybody's expecting rain.
It's not going to rain.
We've had that question a lot. It's a showers or shine event.
Bring
your raincoat and your umbrella and your galoshes.
The show goes on.
It's going to happen.
Thank you so much for coming in. Very first Ames Pride Fest.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for the time that you've given us today.
Yeah, thanks.
Bread and water like some poor man's daughter, no, never for me. Wine and money called me honey and made me feel I was free. Like a glass raised too many times, I broke into you. When
The Road I Took to You by Meg Christian. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. If you've just joined us, I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And at this time every month, we take a look at sustainability efforts in Ames and Iowa State. Yesterday, our own reporter Maggie Westfold spoke with Mary Rankin, Ames and ISU Sustainability Director, and they filed this report.
Mary Rankin is ISU and the City of Ames Sustainability Director to discuss a new fund created by student government, the Green Initiatives Fund. Welcome back for your regular check-in on Local Talk.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
How did the Green Initiatives Fund come about?
There is a very long history, actually, related to the Green Initiatives Fund becoming reality. And that started when I first came to Iowa State University back in 2009. And other campuses have done this across the U.S. They have mainly done it through implementing a green fund. And that green fund is funded through student fees being added on to student tuition. And so depending upon the college, it may be a dollar. It may be a dollar every semester. It may be a dollar a year. It may be $5. It may be $10. But that's traditionally how green funds were funded at a university level related to student activities. As early as 2010, students were approaching me about having a fund set aside that would encourage and allow and support student initiatives related to sustainability. I will say that over the years, we had a number of different student groups that have been so very interested in getting this going at Iowa State. And for various reasons, very understandable reasons, the addition of more fees onto student tuition was not something that we really wanted to delve into. Okay. And so there were different years that had different discussions with different administrative leaders and leadership, and it all sort of came back to, gosh, is this really what we want to do to implement a fee onto, you know, our students? And so then last year, with Leah's leadership and also the leadership of our sustainability director for student government at that time, whose name is Katie Holmes, we had a new little twist on the Green Initiatives Fund.
You brought Leah Gomez with you, the sustainability director for Iowa State University's student government.
Leah, you want to talk about how that came about?
Yeah, so in March of 2017, this past year, Katie and I wrote up a bill that essentially said rather than us adding more onto students' tuition, we would allocate money from Student Government Special Projects Fund in the sum of $15,000. And that money would be allocated towards any student organization who wanted to pursue a sustainability project. And because we weren't touching tuition, it was really, really supported by student government, and we were able to get the bill passed.
Yeah, big difference maker once you figured out a source.
Definitely.
Yes. I doubt if any listener has to wonder why that made such a difference.
How did you come up with the $15,000?
Is that 10% of the annual allocations already going? So the Special Projects Fund is already an allocation to student government. And I think they looked at 10% of the allocation, at least 10%.
For starters. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully in seeing how and what we're able to do with the fund, perhaps, in the coming years.
The popularity, that kind of stuff. So,
What is the process, then, for applying for these funds?
There's an application online on the student government webpage. Any student organization who wants to pursue a sustainability project can download that application and email it back to me. I have a Green Initiatives Committee that will review the applications and determine how the funds are allocated.
The criteria for awarding the funding?
One of the biggest things is that I say student organizations, but essentially it can be a group of students who are interested in carrying out a sustainability project. They can name themselves an organization and then apply.
A group of students can come up with an idea.
Yes.
You're leaving it nice and loose. I think many people would see that as a positive. So once someone applies, what guidelines do they have to meet?
For example, the application has certain guidelines that the student organization would need to follow. So, for example, they have to come up with a budget sheet and a timeline to show us how the funds will be spent and over what amount of time they plan on spending the funds. And along with that, we have them delegate project leaders so we know who should be doing what on the project.
As I understand, one of the parameters and considerations that the committee would look at is how many students would be impacted by a particular project, right? So the more a particular project that applies for funding can have a broad-reaching impact on as many students as possible, or as many students as possible have the opportunity to benefit from that project or be involved in that project, the more that student outreach or connection there is, the more likely that project may be looked on, you know, a little bit more favorably if there was competition for funding. Is
because,
that correct?
Yes. The whole idea of the fund is that we want to impact all of Iowa State universities. So between the students, the faculty, the staff, the actual facilities of the university, we just want to impact as many people in the most sustainable way possible.
If the student group says, gosh, we would really like to see this type of building constructed, or this type of landscaping project go in, or you know, more efforts toward composting or something like that. Or another criteria, as I understand, would be having reached out to those campus experts that are most closely related to what would need to go into place to proceed with that, and just what sort of collaboration is taking place, what sort of connections are taking place related to making sure all those pieces fit well together.
Yes.
Okay, now we're at the point where someone has applied and they've given you their proposal and they're approved. How are they monitored?
The Green Fund Committee is tasked with monitoring the projects and ensuring that people are hitting the deadlines that they set for themselves when they turned in that application. And along with that, we hope to create some sort of means that we can collect the final product of all the students' projects and put it into something that we could hand out to other students to say, like, hey, this is how we were able to use the fund. This is what we were able to accomplish. Whether it's in the form of a web page or a brochure or a little booklet. So that also adds on a little bit incentive to make sure that their project gets carried out in a timely and efficient manner.
Right.
No journey necessarily is done in a straight line. And so I think the committee's taking that into consideration as well. And you know, the exciting thing is this is the first year and we're going to offer the funding. And so next year, if we come back and talk to you, I'm sure we'll have a lot of lessons learned.
Any new process, everybody learns a whole lot, especially like in your first year, your first time frame, whatever it is.
We want to be able to keep this around for a while because, like Mary said, I think it's around 130 other institutions across the country that already has some sort of green initiative fund or loan set in place. So to be able to really establish it this year at Iowa State and be able to get it to continue on throughout the years.
What you expect then in exchange for receiving funding, you want to see the project brought eventually to fruition. Let's see, how does this support Iowa State's overarching Live Green initiative?
The Green Initiatives Fund just does such a great job of rounding out, really engaging all of campus, students, faculty, and staff in how campus can be greener, how we can add more sustainability. It's not just for who's on campus right now, but it's who visits campus. And it really does, these things that we put in place leave a legacy for everyone who comes after us to be part of Iowa State University. The Live Green Initiative has a funding source in place right now for campus projects, basically allowing a college or department to borrow money from a loan fund to put into place a sustainability improvement that will result in a savings to campus. And so through that initiative, there have been a number of projects we've been able to put forth on campus, but they have been very restricted to a college, a department, to faculty, and to staff. In some cases, there definitely have been students that have been on committees that have been part of putting these projects into place. But we've not had a fund from which support could be provided to student-specific initiatives. So I think it does a nice job of finishing that circle, you know, that mm-hmm. full round circle of being able to have everyone involved in increasing sustainability efforts. And I don't know what you think, Leah.
Well, just going off of that, it's been amazing to see how many students have reached out and asked questions about the fund to see how they can get started, how they can apply, what we're looking for in applications. But I think that just goes back to reiterate how much people really do appreciate and want to live by the Live Green model.
Do you have important dates that correlate to this for the Green Initiatives Fund?
The applications were released on October 1st, and the deadline to submit applications to myself is November 17th. So my contact information can be found on the student government's webpage. People can just email me back their applications. And then coming back from Thanksgiving holiday, the Green Fund Committee will start the review process of looking over the funds to then have them distributed when we come back for the spring semester.
Okay.
So people that put applications forth would know before they leave for semester break that they're funded, can start making those plans and mm-hmm. be ready to hit the ground running when they come back in the spring and have that full spring semester. And then, as Leah mentioned, depending upon the scope of the project, mm-hmm. there can be considerations with the committee on how the funds may be utilized in a carryover fashion, mm-hmm. possibly for next year, if mm-hmm. there's phases to the project. So, you know, all of that will be an adventure that you take part in with this first year.
How are you letting the student body know that this is out there for them?
At the beginning of this week, I sent out a massive email to all the sustainability leaders on campus. Okay. And in addition to that, I'm working with the student government's webmaster to have a web page set in place for just the Green Initiatives Fund, where students can go, how to apply, see important deadlines, and see ways that they can get help on applying to the Green Fund. So hopefully in the next week or so, we'll have a web page up and running.
Things are going to be happening, which is great. How long has this been in process?
I know that there had been a lot of talk prior to me even getting on campus about having a Green Fund set in place. But mm-hmm. then my predecessor, Katie Holmes, was the one who started to really get the ball rolling, I guess.
Once the reallocation sort of consideration came into play, I think then you guys probably spent, I don't know, maybe 6-7 months on the whole process, if I were to kind of give an estimate of that.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Because after the funds were allocated, then Katie and I were tasked about looking into all the extra details of the fund, since this was new and uncharted territory. But
But that's the exciting part. When you have the money, there we go.
Things start happening.
It's very exciting.
I'm so excited for these students because, like I said, this has been a vision for many years. And one of the first things I did is emailed back the students that had been working so many years that are now graduated and working, you know, in their careers. It's happening. They were so thrilled.
Well, I have really found this interesting to listen to you both talk about. We've been talking with Mary Rankin, ISU and City of Ames Sustainability Director, with Leah Gomez, the Sustainability Director for Iowa State University Student Government, talking about their Green Initiatives Fund and everything that is to come with that.
Leah mentioned that she's working on getting stuff up on the student government website. And so if folks are interested in checking out more information, that website is StuGov, so it's stugov.iastate.edu.
Okay. Why don't you say that one more time?
Sure. stugov.iastate.edu.
And in addition to that, people can also find my contact information on the student government website, and they can shoot me an email directly, and I'd be more than happy to talk
to them. And that's Leah Gomez. Well, thank you very much, both of you. This is KHOI Community Radio, and it's been good talking with you today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Maggie, for that report with Mary Rankin and Leah Gomez. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you for listening in. And thank you to all the people who have contributed to today's show. Earlier in the show, you heard a summary of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune by Dennis Hart. And if you would like to get more news from the Ames Tribune, their website is amestrib.com. We also heard from Nikki Port from the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at ISU, and Joel Hochstein, chair of Ames Pride, the organization that's putting on Ames Pride Fest tomorrow in the Banshell Park. Local Talk airs 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information about the things you heard on today's show. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of K. Chell. We also heard today I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross and The Road I Took to You by Meg Christian. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Bumper Jackson's A Night of Jazz, Blues, and Country Swing on Friday, October 27th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.